Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's Future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com. /Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about anger management. It's a very, very profound paradigm developed by today's guest, Christian Conti. Walking Through Anger, that's the name of his book, A New Design for Confronting Conflict in an Emotionally Charged World. And this is something that, you know, it's not just a bunch of theory. You've actually applied this in some of the most challenging circumstances imaginable. You go into prisons and you work with prison guards, and prison guards have reason to have a lot of anger because, you know, they suffer a lot of abuse. Their working conditions are very, very stressful. But also prisoners, and these prisoners, man, these are violent individuals. That's their credo, violence and anger. Right. They've had a lot of secondary gain on anger because, you know, they've used knives, weapons. That's the law of the jungle, right?
Right. But I want to show you how this all ties in together. People from maximum security prisons, you, me, and everybody else in the world. So I was in this supermax prison about 2 months ago, and I said, I was speaking to the inmates, and they said, man, why don't you go around the prison, tell everybody what you're about, you know? So I was going block to block, and I went up to one guy in particular said, can you come up to death row? So I did. I went up to death row. The first time I went up to death row, I told the guard, hey, can you open the doors? I want to talk to everybody. And he laughed because you obviously don't come out unless you've got three guards around you and all that stuff. So he said, he laughed. And I said, no, I'm serious. So he called the bubble and he said, Dr. Conti wants the doors to be opened. And he's like, to have the guys come out. And the guy on the bubble over the microphone, over the walkie talkie laughed. And he said, haha. And he said, no, he's serious. Doc wants them out there. So the first time I called everybody out, we kind of had the doors, all the doors just popped open, but only four guys came out because in a prison, in a maximum security prison, when the doors open, when people aren't used to them opening, they don't know why they're opening. So they're skeptical. But word actually travels faster in a prison than it does with people with cell phones because they talk through the pipes. So the second block I went to on death row. So imagine this, I'm on death row. I come into the block. I tell the guard, hey, listen, I would like to have them out there. He hits the guy in the bubble up, hey, Doc, wants them out there, bring them out. So these guys, all of them came out for the second talk. So 25 guys on death row sitting in front of me. And I said to them, I had this lesson for them. And this lesson applies to all of us. Recently, my daughter, who's my life, she said, Daddy, this is the best lesson you ever taught me, this particular one. So I said to the guys, hey, listen, what if I gave you a bucket? If I gave each and every one of you a bucket right now, what would you put in it? And one of the inmates looked at me on death row. He said, I'd put food in it. Okay, you'd have food in your bucket. Then the next inmate, what would you put in your bucket? He said, my cellie's head. In other words, his cellmate's head. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're on death row, you have to make sure nothing makes you flinch. So I just looked at it, and I looked at the first guy, and I said, okay, so you'd have food in your bucket. And I looked at the other guy, and I said, you'd have your cellie's head in your bucket. All right, so my point was, what you put in your bucket is going to be in your bucket. I said, look, if you fill your mind with violence, violence is what's going to be in your mind. If you watch violent movies. So for instance, for everybody out there, if you get angry at politics and you start your day by watching politics or you add it into your bucket during the day, you're filling your mind with the anger that you don't want to be there. So this is a very powerful lesson. So the guy on death row who told me he'd put his cellie's head in his bucket, he got it. He said, man, that's right. He said, you're right. He said, that I do. I listen to angry music, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I was leaving there, I said, listen, this is interesting because I don't know what struck me more. One, that I realized why this guy was on death row, because he was quick to put a cellmate's head in a bucket.
Yeah.
Or two, the more important lesson was, on death row, everybody is single-celled, so they don't have a cellmate. I don't know what the bigger problem was there. But my lesson with that, what's in your bucket, is this. Here's how it applies from death row to kids. My daughter said to me recently, Daddy, the reason why that's the best lesson you ever taught me is I was at my friend's house, and they were about to watch a preview for a scary movie. And I said, I don't want to watch that. And she said, I didn't explain myself to them, but the truth was, I just didn't want that in my bucket. I didn't want that in my psyche. Mm-hmm. This is very powerful. If we can be mindful that what we put in our mind is going to be in our mind.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, we have a finite capacity for carrying things around with us. And we want to optimize, and we don't want to carry excess baggage. And, you know, if we believe in progress and personal evolution, we want to refine what's in that bucket and not, in a sense, vitiate it or pollute it.
That's it, exactly. So I work with some of the most elite athletes in the world. When outside of the world in prison, I work with really top athletes, professional basketball players. And what I say is this. Look, you master
this is performance psychology, because this is geared
performance.
Towards to enhancing performance, because that's a big aspect of performance.
Yeah.
Tom Brady is, got great musculature, he's got great, cardiovascular system, but he's also got an amazing performance psychology. In adversity, he is when the Patriots are down 14 points, Brady has you exactly where he wants you. in the fourth quarter,
five
minutes left.
Right. So yes, you hit the nail on the head. It's performance psychology. And here's the reality. Whether I'm talking about samurai warriors, whether I'm not talking about Olympic athletes or the professional athletes, or whether I'm talking about you and me and everyone else who can hear this right now, we master what we practice. So if we practice complaining all day long, we get really good at complaining. If we practice being helpless all day long, we get really good at being helpless. And the same is true as if we really all truly want peace, we got to practice it. I tell people all the time, if you go into a coffee shop and you say, hey, I'm thirsty, they're going to say, well, what do you want? Well, okay, I need to be specific. And the same is true with your life. Like, what do you want? If you want ultimately, if what you want is peace, and I think we do, if you've ever sat with someone in hospice in their final moments, they're not talking about how they wish they would have gotten over on one more person or scammed somebody else. They're thinking how they could have peace. And if we all know that we're going to want peace, then we've got to practice it. I was telling this to the inmates, and I think this applies to all of us too, and to the athletes I work with. I tell them stories like this because they're real, and you can't beat real stories. But I'll say this. I told the inmates one day, I said, if you had a cellmate who said, he was down for 10 years, and he said, well, I'm going to play pro basketball when I get out of here. Your first question would be, well, when do you practice? And if he told you, man, I'm not going to touch a basketball till I get out of here, you're going to say, there's no way, you'll never do it. And the same is true. If we know we're all ultimately, our hearts, the psalm of life, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, he says, our hearts like drums are beating funeral marches to the grave. So we're all going to end up in that final moment. If we're going to want peace, why not start practicing it now? We master what we practice. What I teach people is how to master the peace that they're ultimately going to want.
Well, so there might be a political pushback to that. So, for example, the people in Hong Kong who feel oppressed, or, Vladimir Lenin in, before the Russian Revolution would say, well, okay, that's one thing. But if you're suffering from oppression, you do want to harness that action towards, perhaps even violent expression to overturn tyranny. What do you say in circumstances like that?
Right. So I say there's a difference. Like, again, come back to that real world cartoon world. In a cartoon world, to say this shouldn't be happening, that's not real. If it is happening and you have to protect your basic survival, that's a whole different ballgame altogether. So what I'm saying is, for the people who, everyday people who aren't out there fighting against that, then let's work on your own inner peace. But absolutely, if you have to, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I can't be thinking about like what I'd love to become one day if I have to worry about my everyday safety. I have to take care of my safety and basic physiological needs before I can ever start to get to self-actualization and some of this other stuff.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, you have a very interesting section of the book, which talks about the physiological concomitants of anger. And there's this term hangry, which is popularized in a commercial, which offers a not very good solution, which is have a candy bar and everything will be all right. But there's it is a popular notion. And, you know, this is actually something that I often work with patients who suffer from anxiety or impatience or irritability. Check your blood sugar. Make sure you have adequate sleep. You actually speak to those issues, because if you're not in good physical condition, you may manifest emotions that are actually, in a sense, artificial emotions that are artifacts of your unsettled disequilibrium physiologically.
Yes, absolutely. So I love the idea of cognitive behavioral therapy, where your thoughts, your feelings. That's a wonderful philosophy. I incorporate that. But the part where I take it beyond that is this. It's not that in cognitive behavioral therapy, they'll say your thoughts cause or determine your feelings. In other words, it's not an event that makes you mad. It's your interpretation of that event. But what my research has found is, yes, that applies in lots of ways. But in addition, your mind always wants to match your body. Mm-hmm. So here's what I mean by that. If you're physiologically hungry, so I always tell people there's an old adage, never go to bed angry. But that's really nice, but that's not actual steeped in neuroscience, because the truth is, if the only reason why you're arguing is because you or your loved one is overly tired, then by all means, go to sleep. Wake up the next morning, if you're still mad, keep fighting. But the odds are, if you're fighting because one of both of you is overly tired, you're not going to be. Our mind wants to match our body. So if our body feels in disarray, so let's say everybody listening downs three energy drinks really quickly. Mm-hmm. That would be awful for your health. But here's what would happen. Your heart would start to race. Your body would mimic physiological anxiety. And then your mind would race to make up a story to match that. So it'd be like, if you're a high functioning person, you might say, oh my goodness, did I miss that meeting? Was I supposed to hit this deadline and I missed it? But the truth is, you might just have more caffeine in your body than what your body is good for your body. So when you can learn to understand, step back, become the observer, and not become reactive to your emotions, but step back and ask yourself, what are your emotions trying to teach you? Well, then you become, instead of a helpless puppet, you become not just being what's called monkey mind, being driven around from this tree to that by your brain, but you start to become in control of it.
And this is a good segue to something that you talk about in the book, which is mindfulness and more specifically the practice of meditation. How can that help us with anger?
So meditation, you know, back when I would talk about it in the 90s, I was looked at as crazy and it was out there. I'm happy to say that in 2019, we see lots of evidence around lowering blood pressure. I've seen studies that demonstrate it shrinks the amygdalae, that center of the fight or flight response, lowers your default mode network. I mean, we have a running internal dialogue of anywhere between 50,000 and 70,000 thoughts a day, and it's called the default mode network, and meditation helps quiet that a bit. Here's what meditation does. You don't have to have beliefs. You don't have to subscribe to any theory. It's a matter of practicing stillness. It's a matter of practicing observing yourself. So let's say I sit in a room and in our own meditation room in my house, I'm in my house right now, but in my meditation room, maybe the dogs start barking because they will see a rabbit out of the window. Mm-hmm. Instead of me saying, oh no, they shouldn't be barking.
Yeah, it's aggravating. It's a distraction. It makes you think, you start to think about, I forgot to call somebody today, or, you know, things like that.
Right. Yeah, what it does is it pushes us into the cartoon world. They shouldn't be barking. I should have done this. We should have done that. What the real world is, you didn't, and the dogs are barking, and it's not the end of the world, and you can handle it. And then when you start to recognize, you practice daily observing yourself, observing your thoughts. And again, not having to be reactive to your thoughts, but observing the way that your thoughts impact you and the way you respond from them. It's powerful. It's transformative. So we've seen tons of, probably the most studies I can, the fastest way I can sum it up is at a minimum 5 minutes a day for 6 weeks can make physiological demonstrable changes in your brain. But what I say to people is this, if you've ever wanted to even consider this, try it for 2 minutes a day. Because look, people can give us excuses for why they can't do 20 minutes or 10 minutes, but it's tough to give yourself an excuse why you can't take 2 minutes a day to sit in stillness. Most people say, well, I can't turn off my thoughts. Well, you don't have to turn off your thoughts. You're observing your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking what I should be doing, you say, okay, this is interesting. You almost step outside yourself and just become the observer. And again, the more you practice it, the more likely you are to master it.
And then there's also the issue of breath control because, there are physiologic changes that occur when you move towards anger. And if you learn breath control, you can actually bring yourself to a place that's more balanced and resourceful.
Right, because you can't hold two opposing physiological states at once. You're not going to be anxious and calm at the same time. If you observe what people look like when they're anxious, you'll see a rapid breathing, shallow breathing. But then if you observe somebody who's in a state of peace, they're going to have slower, more controlled breathing. Yes, we want to come back to understanding our breath. You know, it's funny because there was a young man, he was sent away to a monastery because he was like getting in trouble all the time. So after a year of being gone, his parents said to him, well, what'd you learn? He said, all I learned to do was breathe. And then a few years later, his kid came home and his parents said, well, what are you learning? He's like, all I learned to do was breathe. and then many years later pass, and this young man becomes an old man, this unawakened man becomes awakened, he becomes enlightened. And someone asks him, what's the key? How have you become enlightened? He says, finally, I have learned to breathe.
Uh-huh. It sounds like one of those Zen stories there.
And there are probably like 100 of them throughout that book, so people will be able to read those kind of things. And I like to teach in stories because they're easy for people to read. People like them. They're entertaining. So, I put probably maybe 100 of them in that book.
So it sounds, plausible and right, but is the book programmatic? Does the book offer, I read it and I knew the answer to the question, but I'd like you to state it for the audience. Does it offer a step-by-step pragmatic, implementable pathway towards anger management by reading this book?
Yes. And thank you so much for phrasing it that way, because the reality is this. When you walk into a maximum security prison, you have no chance to be fake without being spotted in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. You have no chance if you're not bringing somebody that's actually going to work. And if the stuff I do works in there, if it works with some of the best athletes in the world, it works in everyday people. I've been doing this 20 years. It works, and there are pragmatic steps to take. Now, the reality is this. This isn't a quick fix. So it's not a pill you take and all of a sudden everything's magically better. I'm providing an absolutely tried and true methodology. Of course, it's going to take some effort on your part. It's going to take some discipline. But yes, it's super, super achievable.
Okay. And so what are some resources that are available? Of course, there's the book. It's called Walking Through Anger. The author is Christian Conti. And you have a website, right?
Right. DrChristianConti.com. And then on YouTube, I'm easy to find on YouTube. Yep. And I do this channel. It's a free resource for people, but you just type in Dr. Christian Conti, Conte on YouTube. And there's lots of free videos for people to tap into, and would love for people to subscribe and share that.
Also, there's practical YouTubes, on issues related to child rearing. That's an area where people really tend to fly off the handle. And you have, you as a parent and a PhD psychologist, you've got some really down-to-earth, practical, implementable suggestions on how to diffuse some sources of family strife, right?
Well, I do. And so I developed a theory called the 4 C's of parenting before we had our daughter. Our daughter's 14. And the four C's of parenting are super pragmatic. Choices, consequences, consistency, compassion. I actually wrote a book called Zen Parent, Zen Child. And so I do a video on YouTube about 10 ways to discipline your children and the four C's. And I think what people can learn by that is a very pragmatic approach. Does it work? Absolutely. Does it apply across the board? Absolutely. But it also takes effort. But once you do those four C's, my goodness, can you watch changes in your pragmatic change? This is why I'm excited. People can do the stuff I do. In this day and age, if you're not legit and you don't do stuff that actually works, people would call you on it in a second. And I've been thriving for 21 years because the stuff I'm talking about works. Sure, it's going to take some effort, but yes, it absolutely works. It can bring peace to you and your family.
And for people who may identify with this and say, gee, you know, I really now, I recognize I've got an anger management problem. There is this thing called NAMA, the National Anger Management Association. Are there, you work with people one-on-one, but are there professionals all over the country who are trained in these techniques?
There are. There definitely are. And there are professionals everywhere with it. I'm currently not taking on people right now, but I definitely, there are people you can call, and each state has, if you go to NAMA's website, you'll learn in your state, in your area, where you can see somebody one-on-one. I think that's fantastic. I mean, look, we need, the reality is people see all the actions, not our intention. So it doesn't matter if you didn't mean to be angry. It doesn't matter if you didn't mean to go off on Aunt Sally at Thanksgiving. The reality is people see your actions, not your intentions. And there are very pragmatic things you can learn in anger management. You know, I have an anger management workbook that gives practical techniques for people because I believe in this stuff. You know, I believe in giving people stuff that's actually going to work. So there are things you can do to learn about yourself.
Well, great. I'd like you to, you know, your next step is to send a copy of the book to each and every newsroom across America, also to each and every member of Congress. And then maybe you'll take on the adversaries in the Middle East and, you know, in maybe take a trip to Hong Kong and see if we can, you know, achieve some conciliation. Because emotions are running high across the globe, and it only seems to be getting worse. There are going to be some devastating consequences.
There are. I mean, I think I'm built for this. I mean, I think, you know, I'm a stronger person physically, and I think that's helped me through the years. But the reality is we have a lot of work to do. And sometimes what I mean by being stronger physically is I'm disciplined enough to realize you don't have to react to emotions. And when you can become, when you can realize you don't have to be, it's like a puppet. Like if somebody yells at you, you're angry. If somebody disagrees with you, you're angry. If somebody agrees with you, you're happy. You're completely giving your power and control over to that person. Mm-hmm. And what fascinates me, what's absolutely fascinating to observe is that people willingly do this. Like, hey, you don't believe what I believe. Now I'm going to be angry with you until you believe what I believe. So you literally handed power of your life over to other people. And when we become conscious, we stop doing that. We take our control back.
Yeah.
And life is short. I say take control of your life. Try not to allow everybody else to control it or others to control it.
Well, there's an expression for that. And that expression is, I really lost it the other day. And that really embodies what you say. It's like you lose a part of yourself and you diminish yourself when you succumb to these primitive emotions. It's something to work on.
No, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Look, let me end on this. Every single emotion you'll ever experience has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Emotions inevitably come and go, but your actions, what you do out of that emotion, that can't be undone. So it's worth being mindful to learn how to control your emotions. I kind of wish they taught this stuff in school. Because whereas some people might use math and some people might use literature, we're all going to experience emotions.
Indeed. And on that note, a very happy and harmonious and peaceful Thanksgiving to you, your family, and to our listeners as we move into the holiday season. Thank you very much, Dr. Christian Conte. His book is Walking Through Anger. Dr. Christian Conte, Conte, .com is the website. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you have a beautiful holiday.
Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Many of us wonder sometimes what's going on with our brains, like when we can't recall a name that should be totally familiar to us or forget why we went into the kitchen. These worries take on a little more weight as we grow older. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to slow cognitive decline and enhance memory and mental performance. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Brain Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.